Translation: the living force, being agitated by the Virat Purush, generated hunger and thirst. And when he desired to eat, when he desired to drink and eat, the mouth opened. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The process by which all living beings in the womb of the mother develop their sense organs and sense perceptions appears to follow the same principles in the case of the Virat Purusha, the sum total of all living entities. Therefore, the supreme cause of all generation is not impersonal or without desire. The desires for all kinds of sense perception and sense organs exist in the supreme, and thus they take place in the individual persons. This desire is the nature of the supreme living being, the absolute truth. Because he has the sum total of all mouths, the individual living entities have mouths. Similarly, with all other senses and sense organs. Here, the mouth is the symbolic representation of all sense organs, for the same principles apply to the others also. Jai. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Translation again. The living force, being agitated by the Virat Purusha, generated hunger and thirst, and when he desired to drink and eat, the mouth opened. So, here we are in this very interesting conversation between Shukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit is, as we know, on the bank of the Ganges. He's surrounded by many, many sages and asking these questions to Shukadev Goswami about creation. One may wonder, why is Maharaj Parikshit asking about creation when he's got a few days left? He's got a few days to live. Doesn't he want to just jump in to the ecstatic, loving, amorous pastimes of Radhe Shyam in Vrindavan? Maharaj Parikshit has a devotional inclination. And with his devotional inclination, he was asking about creation. So this is one thing that's interesting, is the mood of Maharaj Parikshit. His mood wasn't a mood, oh, you better satisfy my intellect. Because sometimes if we don't understand something, we challenge someone with questions. And if we don't get it, that means it's not true. Isn't it? If I don't understand, that means it just cannot even be the truth. Cannot exist. But Maharaj Parikshit had a devotional inclination. Maharaj Parikshit was surrounded by sages who were not all personalists, who were not all devotees of Krishna. So Maharaj Parikshit was also asking the questions to satisfy the doubts of those around him. Even though he only had a few days to live, he was thinking of everyone around him. How often are we thinking of those around us, especially when the situation has become intensely challenging? But Maharaj Pariksit was in this mood that, okay, it's not just about me, even though he could be forgiven for the 7 days to think it's all about me. So Maharaj Pariksit is asking these questions about creation. It's interesting how the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually the first text in this chapter describes all the 10 different divisions, we could say, or the 10 subjects, so creation, sub-creation, planetary systems, protection, creative impetus, the change of manus, the science of God, returning back home, liberation, and the summum bonum. So these are the 10 subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, these are the 10 subjects of Puranas, actually. Of all the Puranas, these are the 10 subject matters. But the special thing about the Srimad Bhagavatam is that all the 9 other subjects are all surrounding the 10th subject, which is the Ashraya, the summum bonum, the ultimate shelter, who is Krishna. So this is the difference between the Srimad Bhagavatam and all the other Puranas, that everything is focused around the 10th subject matter, or in the Srimad Bhagavatam's case, we could even say the 10th canto. The 10th canto is all about the loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So all these different descriptions of the Lord, the Purusha incarnations, the creation, all these stories of devotees in all the preceding cantos, the different pastimes of the different incarnations of the Lord, they're all leading us up to this wonderful Leela of Krishna in the 10th canto. So why is it that we need to hear about creation? Why is it that there's so much explanation? The thing is that if we went straight in to the 10th canto and we hear about Krishna stealing the clothes of the gopis, if we go straight into the 10th canto and we hear that Krishna was stealing butter from all the households in Vrindavan, we might start to think, who is this Krishna? You know, who is this Krishna that is behaving in such an awkward way? You know, it's quite awkward. Who is this Krishna, when we read the Mahabharata, who is this Krishna who is telling Yudhishthir to lie? Who is this Krishna who is telling Arjun to kill Karna when he cannot fight back? Who is this Krishna who's telling Bhima to strike Duryodhan below the waist? Who is this Krishna? He doesn't seem like a moral person. Forget being God. He doesn't even seem like a moral human being. So this is why we have the 9 cantos, because what happens is we begin to appreciate Krishna's greatness. And once we start to even read Srimad Bhagavatam, for myself anyway, when I start to read all of these different descriptions of the Virat Purush, the Virat Rup, the universal form, I begin to think, whoa, no idea. You know, like how, what, where, what's going on? And then we begin to appreciate, actually, this Krishna, he's so great. Right, that he can expand into Vishnu. He can lie down, and when he exhales, millions of universes come about. And out of these millions of universes, one universe is the one we're in. And in that universe, there's Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And within this universe, there's all these different planets. Within this universe, there's the planet Earth. And within Earth, there is Europe. And within Europe, there is the UK. And within the UK, there is London, where there is a Watford. And we're thinking, whoa, okay. So I'm making my life as if I'm so important, but actually, we're not even a speck of a speck of who is Krishna. And when we begin to appreciate the greatness of Krishna, we begin to actually deeply acknowledge and deeply accept that he can do what he wants. right? If he wants to steal butter, he can steal butter. I mean, if he can, if millions of universes come out of his pores, and if he wants to steal a bit of butter, okay, go ahead. Because now we've accepted that Krishna is God. And when we accept that Krishna is God, then we can appreciate his sweetness. Then we can appreciate the madhuram, his real sweetness. So Krishna is misunderstood. He's misunderstood. Why is he misunderstood? Because his greatness is not really acknowledged. His greatness is not acknowledged. Ram is misunderstood. When Ram banishes Sita, we shouldn't say banish, it's quite a strong word. When Ram and Sita have to separate at the end of the Ramayana, how much is, till today, Ram is criticized so much. But if we don't understand who is the Lord, if we don't understand the compassionate nature of the Lord, we don't understand that Krishna, that is Suridam Sarvabhutanam, the friend, the well-wisher of all living entities, then how will we really accept, that Krishna is my best friend? Krishna is my best friend. And this great person, from whom the universes are coming out, from whom everything is being controlled, is really interested in me. Like, he's actually really interested in me. And somehow we find that hard to accept. We find that hard to accept that someone so great is so interested in me. And because I can't accept that he must be interested in me, I just block myself away. I begin to think, well, that can't be possible. That can't be possible that someone is accepting me for who I am. You know, because Krishna accepts us for who we are. He doesn't need us to be any different. If he did, he would have made us different. You know, he made us just the way we are. He loves us just the way we are. He doesn't stop loving us when we make mistakes. He's always ready. He's always ready when we are ready for this relationship. So this great personality, Krishna, accepts me. And because he accepts me, we are here, we are trying to develop a relationship with him. But while we are here, we bring our baggage with us, don't we? We bring our baggage. You know, I'm here, Krishna, but I've got this heavy load. I've got this heavy load and it's wearing me down. And this heavy load is full of impressions from previous lives, impressions from this life, and difficulties and challenges that we've gone through. And then we come to Krishna. And then what happens? We bring this heavy load, and in one sense we accept Krishna just to take the bag straight away and leave us to be free from this load so we can jump and dance. But at the same time, what we do is we bring this baggage and start to blame him. Okay, maybe this is because of you. If you're this person who's so loving, how could you? How could you do this to me? How could this happen to me? And what's happening here, again, is we're not understanding Krishna. If we don't understand him, because of who he is, his greatness, and that's why we read all these chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, to really appreciate his greatness, then what happens? We go before Krishna and we don't understand him. We just expect him to be the person who immediately takes away all our suffering and immediately gives us Krishna Prem. Not just Krishna Prem. We also need all our material desires satisfied. All these things he must deal with on day one. And if he doesn't deal with them all on day one, I just doubt him straight away. Maybe he doesn't love me. Because for us, love in this material world has equated to receiving something. Right? Okay. Am I going to receive, as a child, love means, am I going to receive the care from my parents? When we grow up, love means some amorous dealing, maybe with the opposite sex. As we grow older, love means some companionship and some friendship from those around us. So for us, this is how we equate to love. And then we come to Krishna and we're like, hey, how about me? How about all my troubles? How about all my issues? Sort them out right now. But also remember, this is my list of things that will show me that you love me. It's like a child, if a child doesn't get the toy that they want, what does the child say to the parent? You don't love me, mama. You don't love me, papa. That's it. To them, it's very simple. You don't give me what I want. My 6-year-old daughter does this. Papa doesn't love me. You know, and then I like, okay, what do you want? but this is the thing, that if we don't get what we want when we want it, we immediately think that the Lord doesn't love us. We immediately believe that actually, how could he love me? But what happens is, we've not taken time to understand him. And if we take time to understand him, we really can appreciate and accept that Krishna does things in his time. And the way to really, really start to accepting him more and appreciating and acknowledging his love for us more is just at some points just to reflect. And just take some time to look back and think about all the things that we've gone through since becoming a devotee, since coming to the temple, since seeing Radha Gokulananda for the first time. And just think about all the wonderful things that have happened previously when at that particular time you were doubting him. And when we look back and we see how life has unfolded, actually, there's been some wonderful arrangements that Krishna has made for us. It's just at that time, we weren't able to accept them as wonderful arrangements. We were just thinking, what is he playing at now? What is he doing now? So, we want to understand Krishna for who he is. And Krishna, who he is someone that deeply cares for us and will give us what we need at his time. What we need in his time. And in that time where we're not getting what we want, we can accept that Krishna is right now giving me what I really need. Right now, what I'm getting is what I really need from Krishna. Otherwise, we'll just misunderstand him. And when we misunderstand someone, how many times have we misunderstood someone that actually had a good intention? Has that happened? That we just think that they're up to something, and then later on we realize, oh, like that. I hope they didn't know what I was thinking about them. We see in the Ramayana when Ram and Sita and Lakshman were in Chitrakoot, and they'd just been in the forest for some time, and Bharat goes back to Ayodhya after spending some time in his uncle's home, and he sees, oh, Ram's not here anymore. Okay, what's going on? And he realizes, he hears the whole story. He hears all the madness that happened while he was away. And immediately he's starting to make plans to go to the forest and tell Ram that he should come back. He should come back. And Bharat's plan was, look, my father, Dashrath, he's made this vow. But what we'll do, me and Ram, Bharat's thinking, me and Ram, we'll just swap. So in that way, the vow is still upheld because one of the sons is in the forest and Ram gets to come back. So Bharat had this real selfless plan. When he got to Ayodhya, all the citizens doubted him. They all doubted him. They thought he was part of this whole plan that KK and Mantra had schemed with Dashrath. And the citizens of Ayodhya thought, well, Bharat must be part of this because Bharat wasn't here and now he's here and Ram is gone. But what happened is Bharat, through his selflessness and through his love for Ram, began to show the citizens of Ayodhya that he wasn't interested in anything except Ram. So they go to the forest and they create this big road. They go all the way, they go to Chitrakoot and they get into the forest. And when Ram sees that some sort of army is approaching their little hut, Ram says to Lakshman, have a look, see what's going on. And Lakshman goes up and he sees from a distance and he sees Bharat. And he sees a whole army behind him. And Lakshman, with his love for Ram, with his protective feelings for Ram, misunderstood Bharat. He said to Ram, your brother Bharat is coming here and he's trying to kill us while we are unarmed in the forest. He is going to try and destroy us, but you don't worry, Ram. I'm here and I'm going to kill Bharat straight away. And Ram's like, just chill out a second, relax. I think he's coming here to offer me the kingdom of Ayodhya. And then Bharat, as we know, Bharat comes. And when Bharat comes, he begs and pleads with Ram, please, 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 you go back to Ayodhya and let me stay here. How often do we misunderstand someone and then later on realize actually they had a lot of love and intention, a lot of love in their intention, within their intention. Sometimes it's hard to understand the intention of someone else. Actually, of course it's hard because we're not them. But we always can understand the intention of ourselves. That is something we can always tune into. What is my intention? We can only not realize our intention if we're not thinking before. If we're acting in the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance, if we let those lower modes overcome us, then we won't think and then we won't know our own intention. We'll just keep going and doing, if we're in a tamasic mode, we're just not doing anything. But if we are practicing our spiritual life from the mode of goodness, we're thinking. And when we're thinking, we're thinking of what my intention is. What is my intention? And how can I, with my devotional intention, my higher intention, serve others? We won't always know the intention of someone else, but at least we could be human and moralistic and just, what do they say? Innocent before proven guilty. We can at least do that much. Let's give someone the benefit of the doubt. A lot of the time what happens, someone does something and straight away we are like, poof, 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 poof. We got our spiritual gun out, ready to attack back, ready to fight back, but actually not realizing that this person may have a devotional inclination. We're thinking, Maharaj Parikshit, why are you asking about creation? But he's got a devotional inclination. He's thinking of those around him. He's thinking of those that are around him. Prabhupada, he came to the West and he started to give sannyas to many disciples. He was being criticized. Jai. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Bhagwan Ki Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Bhagwan Ki Jai Gornithai Bhagwan Ki Jai. So Srila Prabhupada was being criticized. How can you give sannyas? So many devotees are falling down. Sannyasis are not being able to keep up to this very strict vow. But Srila Prabhupada's intention is he's starting a worldwide revolution, a worldwide movement. And for that to happen, what he was doing needed to happen. He needed to give sannyas. He knew that not everyone's going to last their whole lifetime in this vow of sannyas. But risks needed to be taken. Because what was Srila Prabhupada's intention? To spread love of Godhead all around the world. That was his intention. Once an Indian gentleman said to Srila Prabhupada, your disciples, they're always sleeping in your class. And Prabhupada said, always? And they said, they're always sleeping in your class, like all the time. Maybe some of the time they're awake, but most of the time they're just sleeping in class. They're not listening to you. And Prabhupada said to that gentleman, they're awake this much, but look how much they're doing for me. You're awake this much, how much are you doing for me? So, and if we see, what did Srila Prabhupada do? He revolutionized Brahminical culture. He was giving sannyas to the Westerners. He was allowing ladies to take Brahmin initiation. He was allowing ladies to cook for him. All these wonderful things Srila Prabhupada did. Why? Because his intention was spreading love all around the world. spreading love. And love comes from the source, the original source of love, who is Krishna. So that was Prabhupada's intention. But some were looking at him and thinking, what is he doing? What is he doing? Just giving judgment. How could he do this? How could he do this? KK, what did she do? She overlooked Dashrath's intention. Because Mantra poisoned her mind, she overlooked Dashrath's intention. She just started to think, Dashrath is now scheming against me. Dashrath is scheming against my son. Totally misunderstood him, and then catastrophic events happened later, banishing Ram to the forest. How many times have we seen a devotee do something a bit dodgy? And it just looks a bit dodgy. But yeah, maybe we can just find out what the intention is, or try to inquire, what is the intention before we really start to create offenses, before we really become offensive. And what we could really do to help ourselves is try to think, what is it that's bugging me so much about what that other devotee is doing? Like, what, there's one side of it we don't understand. We don't understand why they're doing or what they're doing. We don't quite get the intention. And because we don't quite get the intention, we think the worst before thinking the best. We pass judgment before knowing the facts. And sometimes what happens is we begin to it really starts to get under our skin. What this particular person is doing starts to really get under our skin. But when it starts to get under our skin, we know that actually this is within me. The only reason it's bugging me so much, the only reason it's getting to me so much, is because this is actually within me somewhere. And we can use this as Krishna guiding me to what is within me that I can work on. What is within me that I can work on? And Krishna's just giving us that vision. This is Krishna's love for us. We're feeling that this person has hurt me. And because this person has hurt me, Krishna, why are you doing this to me? But actually, if we think about it, if we look at it the other way, Krishna, why is it that this is hurting me and it's not hurting this other person? Why is it hurting me so much and not this other person? And then we can go into this journey of inner self-exploration and try and work out what is within us. What are the anarthas within me? What are the conditionings within me that is blocking me from seeing Krishna's love in this situation? What is it that's within me that is blocking me? Maybe I'm not really understanding myself very well. And if I'm not understanding myself very well, what chance do we have of understanding someone else? If we're not even understanding ourselves. If we don't understand that maybe within me I have a feeling unacceptable. Maybe there's an example. Okay, give my own example. So maybe I have a feeling of feeling unacceptable. And because I feel unaccepted within myself, if I feel unaccepted within myself, then when I have an interaction with another devotee, I just begin to think that they don't accept me. That person doesn't accept me. That person doesn't accept me. And ultimately, Radhe Shyam, Radha Gokulananda, they don't accept me. But what the big problem is maybe I've not really ever felt accepted and I've not worked on that. And maybe Krishna's giving me an opportunity to understand my own conditionings. And when I can work on my own conditionings, then that block can go away and then I can have a more deeper relationship with the Lord. And this also works with the positives. Do we understand what uplifts me in Krishna consciousness? Like, we can think about this. What really inspires me in my spiritual life? What inspires me in Krishna consciousness? Which association uplifts me? Like, whose association when I'm around this devotee really uplifts me and gets me really, really enthused about Krishna consciousness? Who is that devotee? Who are they? And can I get more of their association? What are my desires? What are my spiritual desires? What are my material desires? We can ask ourselves, we can understand ourselves. And if in this way we can come, if we can accept what our desires are, rather than thinking, no, the goal is here, my desires are here, so let me suppress them, let me pretend they're not there, what will happen? They'll just keep coming back. They'll just keep coming back. But if we can acknowledge what our desires are, accept what our desires are, then we are taking responsibility of our spiritual life. And we can't pass the buck to someone else. We fly our own aeroplane. So if we're not passing the buck to someone else, we're taking responsibility of our spiritual life, then what will happen? We'll become a useful instrument. Not an instrument that is constantly frustrated and constantly agitated. Because that can happen. We become constantly frustrated, constantly agitated, because our felt needs are not being met. But we need to know what they are. And if we know what they are, we take responsibility for who we are. And when we take responsibility for who we are, we can work on ourselves and develop this deep relationship with the sadhus, with the guru, and with Krishna. We can then understand when Krishna says something in the Bhagavad Gita, when we hear about Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we can accept it. We can accept it because we've worked on the fact that maybe, actually, I am acceptable, the devotees do accept me, and Krishna does accept me. And then when we go to the spiritual world, it's like we're not going to really understand what the spiritual world is like until we get there. But when we get there, we'll understand that everything and everyone is fully conscious, in absolute consciousness. Even the pillows are conscious that, oh, Krishna's head is here, but I want to serve Krishna's lotus feet. And the pillow then wants to go towards Krishna's lotus feet so that the pillow can serve Krishna's lotus feet. So we won't know the stones, the dust, the trees, the grass. Everything is in absolute consciousness. Absolute consciousness means they're deeply understanding their relationship with Krishna. Deeply understanding the relationship with Krishna. So we come from that place. We come from that place. We've forgotten all of this whilst being in the material world. But when we start to revive this, when we start to revive our relationship with Krishna, who we are in our conditioned sense, who we are trying to become, and how we can really develop a relationship with the devotees in a way that is going to inspire us in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we feel, oh, the devotees are frying me out. I need to be on my own. But when we're on our own, how much progress can really be made? Actually, the opposite is likely to happen. We see with Bharat Maharaj, he was in the forest. His intention with the deer at the beginning was very Krishna conscious. But without association, as time went on, it became more about the deer and less about Krishna. Which is a wonderful lesson for all of us, that we need to have uplifting association. It's not just about association. Yes, association of devotees. We should be friendly with all devotees all the time. But we need to understand who uplifts me. Who gives me that spiritual enthusiasm? Who gives me that spiritual determination? And let me try and serve that person. Let me try and get their association more and more and more. And that way, we are looking after ourselves. Otherwise, what happens? We just go through spiritual life, Krishna consciousness, just how materialists go through material life. Doing my 16 rounds, doing my 4 regs, yeah, coming to the temple, da, 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 go to work, feed the family, go to a cinema, go to the nightclub. It's just going on. It's just going on, and life just passes by, and years just go by, and years go by. But then at some point, we're going to reach this place of, okay, where am I going? Where am I really going with all of this? So when we want to really, really, really embrace and imbibe what Krishna has given us through the Bhagavatam, yes, let's accept Krishna as someone who's so great, yet so loving. Someone who can do anything, but someone who still wants me. Someone who still accepts me. Someone who really loves me for who I am, and he doesn't need me to be anyone else. He doesn't need me to be like that person or the other person. He just loves me for who I am. So let me bring out the best of me and give that to Krishna. Let me not be fearful and scared about the dirt inside. Let me go and dig it all out, understand what it is, and spiritualize it all. And then once it has become spiritualized, once you've dug it all out and it's become spiritualized, we'll become absolutely conscious, fully conscious, like the pillow, like the grass, like all the devotees in Vrindavan Dham. So maybe we can stop here. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Would anyone like to share any thoughts, reflections, questions? Please feel free. Yes, Manava Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. You were saying at the beginning that when we appreciate that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that we can appreciate his sweetness. But you can see that the Vrajavasis, they don't know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they're experiencing so much sweetness. It seems a contradiction. Could you say anything?
Yeah, I could try. So for us, the sadhakas, when we, the sadhakas, appreciate Krishna's greatness, then we can appreciate Krishna's sweetness. And that sweetness includes the relationship he has with the Brajbasis. But those who are the Brajbasis, those who are there with Krishna, they don't need to know that Krishna is God. Whether he's God or not God, that love is there. So for the sadhaka, we need to accept Krishna's greatness to appreciate his sweetness. But those in Vrindavan Dham, who are in that relationship, to them it doesn't matter. Pure love, when we've got pure love for Krishna, it doesn't matter whether he's God, he's not God. I just love Krishna for who he is.
Because we hear a lot, we're not qualified to hear Krishna's pastimes, and we should just hear what we're reading today about the Virat Rupa, etc., or Krishna's creation. So, at what point should we start hearing Krishna's pastimes? Because we never, even during Bhagavatam class, we seem to stop at 10th canto, part one. We don't continue. We just go back to the first canto, and it just seems to. So, what point are we qualified to hear Krishna's pastime?
Well, I mean, Srila Prabhupada, when he was here, he wrote the Krishna book, and the Krishna book is Krishna's pastimes, and the Krishna book wasn't just for. It was for everyone. And Srimad Bhagavatam is also for everyone. So Krishna's pastimes are there, and they were being mass distributed under Srila Prabhupada's watch. He knew that the Krishna book, which is Krishna's pastimes, is being distributed. So I think to hear Krishna's pastimes, Prabhupada made it quite clear by writing the Krishna book and getting the Krishna book distributed that we can hear Krishna's pastimes. It's maybe that we won't appreciate we might not appreciate the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes unless we read the preceding cantos before the 10th canto. But then when we do read Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto, then we'll appreciate the sweetness more. So the pastimes are there.
Simultaneously,
yeah. I think so, because Prabhupada did that. The Krishna book was being passed around at the same time he was writing Srimad Bhagavatam. So, if anyone has any other thoughts on that, yes. Sure.
I had a question, no commentary about the question of Prabhuji. So my question is, what for you is the middle ground to judge something? Because, you know, devotees, they are, all the Prabhupada books, they say that we have to be self-aware. But at the same time, we hear as well that, as you were mentioning, we have to see ourselves because maybe we are judging something. So what for you is the middle point? What is a good judgment? Because sometimes with this mentality of, I don't want to judge, horrible things happen.
Very good point. I think judging is always there, and we shouldn't think that there's no judging. Is we're always judging, and if you tell someone not to judge, you're judging them. So it's like the judging is there, but I think the judging should, what we were saying was that not to judge with always having a negative, having that negative assumption when making a judgment. But ultimately, Prabhupada and his disciples and all the devotees actually who are practicing Krishna consciousness in a serious way, we see that our Krishna consciousness means that we want to be independently thoughtful. You know, it's not that we're going to stop thinking, or we're going to just throw our intelligence out the window. So we want to be independently thoughtful, and that means also having spiritualized intelligence. So part of that is judging what is good for me, what is not good for me, whose association uplifts me, whose association actually is not good for me. All of that is part of judging. But at the same time, when we are making these judgments so that we can progress in our spiritual life, we're not going to think, it's better not to think negatively of that person, or reduce someone to someone's someone's way of being, someone's thinking, someone's own anarta, someone's conditionings. Not reduce them to that, but at the same time, making judgments for ourselves that's going to help us advance. So we should make judgments that's going to help us advance. When we said that we need to think about whose association uplifts me, that's making a judgment. Whose association uplifts me is a judgment. What inspires me in Krishna consciousness is a judgment that I'm making. It's what inspires me. What doesn't inspire me? Is that okay? Do you want to say something more? Even if someone is in power and someone has a position, when you say power, I guess that means someone has a position, that doesn't mean we should throw our intelligence out of the window. So we should always be alert, aware and thoughtful, because that is something that no one can do for us. So we should be very much, we shouldn't ever throw that away. That should always be there. Hare Krishna. Anyone else? Tarunabhu? Oh, you got the mic. Okay, just have the mic. Okay. Jai, okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.